For the first time in 14 years, May 1st, 2022, Evil Empire Sports. I'm your host, Rob Macarello, on the air, broadcasting, talking about sports. Man, 14 years, a lot's changed between that time and now. Got a lot less hair, a lot more problems, still watching the Yanks, and still eager to talk to everybody else that's out there, share a little bit of my thoughts and feedback, and hopefully have a good time. So launching the podcast again, looking to get back into the mix. A lot going on in the sports world, particularly the Yankees are in first place in the AL East. Who would have thought that? And also have the best record in baseball. They've got the best run differential in the American League. The only team better than them in all of baseball is that super team out west in the Dodgers. But the Yankees just finished up a sweep of the Kansas City Royals. They've come off the heels of a string of, I believe, 9 wins in a row now. And certainly taking advantage of the weak underbelly of their schedule in this early part of the season. You know, some of the early feedback on this Yanks team, look, they're taking advantage of some of those poorer teams. How much can you hype this team up right now? Look who they've beaten. They still haven't really shown that they could consistently beat the Rays or the Blue Jays as they've got this younger, retooled team. And all that's true, right? But we can't fault the Yankees for beating the teams that are in front of them this year. And I'll say that's even more true considering the fact that they've spent the last, what, 2, 3, 10 years not really stomping on those lower-level teams like they should. The Rays have seemingly owned the Yankees, right? Outside, I think, of maybe, what was it, last year or the year before, where the Yankees were completely beating up on the Red Sox. You know, they fight well against those stronger teams, and they're respectful or you know, let me say that they play up to the talent level that they should. But it works in the opposite direction, too. They play down to the talent. And that's kind of scary in a league right now that's so top and bottom heavy, right? There's not too many middle-of-the-road teams right now. Maybe you want to call the White Sox a middle-of-the-road team. They're dealing with some injuries. Maybe you want to call a team like I can't really call the Houston Astros a middle-of-the-road team right now, because even with some of the folks that they've lost to free agency and, you know, Altuve's got some injuries, they're still a really strong ball club. But, you know, coming into this season, and maybe it's just the, you know, the neat thing to do or the fact that the team's got a $200-plus million payroll, everyone's on the Yankees. Oh, they're the team to beat in the American League. Oh, they're the team to beat in the AL East. And, you know, even though the Blue Jays might be considered one of the favorites as well, it's just like rote. It's just routine. These people will say that the Yankees are the better club. And coming into the season, especially what happened in 2021, I might not have agreed with that, right? You know, they get rid of Gary Sanchez in a trade. They package Urshela with him. You know, with Sanchez, a guy coming through his arbitration years that you're going to give a big deal to, you know, when your $324 million pitcher and Gerrit Cole doesn't want to throw him the ball, when the guy strikes out 200 times, can't hit his weight, can't put the ball in play, you know, his job title is catcher, but he can't catch the ball. One of his talents is a big arm to throw runners out. No one steals bases anymore, particularly in the American League with the DH now. Both leagues have the DH. So they move on from him. And you've got Kyle Higashioka, who's been in the Yankees organization since 2009, who, ironically enough, modeled his swing after Josh Donaldson, who's now on the team too, as your everyday catcher, who very quickly is replaced in most of the starting lineups by, you know, Trevino and other players behind the dish. It's not an everyday guy. So you've got a big hole at catcher. Right, you bring in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, really a third baseman as his strong suit defensively, but you're going to put him at shortstop. And he's had some touchy moments to start off the season, really putting the ball in play, playing a clean defense at short now as we get through the end of April. But that certainly coming into the season, a question mark. Aaron Hicks, what can you rely on from him? Coming off injuries, you know, a switch hitter that he stands in the right-handed batter's box when there's a lefty on the mound. He's not going to hit it. So really just a threat from one side of the plate. Does he play solid defense? It's an adventure at times out there. He's got a big arm in center field. But, you know, what are you going to get from him? That's a question mark, right? At the time, DJ LeMahieu, there's a guy who's a silver slugger, gold glover at second base, coming off of injuries and a down year. Was it because he was hurt? Was it because he didn't have a spot on the field? Was it inconsistent where he was going to play, when he was going to play? You know, what were you going to get at him this year? Anthony Rizzo, not the Matt Olson signing that you would have wanted as your premier first baseman, or Freddie Freeman, who goes out west to the Dodgers. Why can't the Yankees get a player like that? You know, it looked like Brian Cashman and company were shopping out of the bargain bin again. It's so weird to say that, right? The team's got a tough time signing the biggest free agents, so we think, you know, after they've signed Gerrit Cole to mega deals, after they make a trade for Giancarlo Stanton after he wins an MVP. But, man, it just always seems like there are obvious holes that don't get addressed, right? Kind of like the year that they let Robinson Cano go, and instead they signed Jacoby Ellsbury when they had a ton of outfielders. Never will make sense to me. But, you know, the Yankees are where they are right now, despite all those question marks coming into the season. And, again, for a team that last year couldn't seemingly take care of business against those weaker teams, particularly in the division, where the Rays went, what, 18-1 against the Orioles? And I'm not sure the Yankees were 500 against them, just barely. And that was the difference in the division. So it's encouraging this year that the Yankees are taking care of business. Now, the other interesting thing is that they're doing that without all of their pieces gelling, right? The organization is so committed to getting Gleyber Torres at bats. He's largely been a disappointment. I mean, the Yankees might be known for three things: the interlocking NY, no names on the back of a pinstripe jersey, and absolutely torpedoing the career of prospects, right? Making these deals a couple years back when they got rid of guys in the middle of the season like Andrew Miller and Carlos Beltran and all that. And the, you know, Clint Frazier, they get him, and Gleyber Torres, they get him. And, you know, all the way back to the Killer Bees, at least as my fandom is concerned, these can't miss prospects that they miss on. And that's one of the reasons why free agency sort of glares at you, because regardless of the sport, you know, baseball has this salary cap to a degree with the luxury tax and all of that that the Yankees don't want to pay. You know, insult to injury that the Rays run the organization and the baseball club better than them, but because the Yankees spend more money, they also have to send them a check every year. I get why they don't want to pay, but prospects are just that. It's not a sure thing. It's not a sure bet. So the Yankees having to rely on some of these younger players, I don't know if their scouting or their talent evaluations or, you know, the quants, the analytics guys, they can't quite piece it together. I think it's Gleyber's approach, but, you know, in any event, they've got inconsistent play out of him, to be kind. They've gotten inconsistent play out of Joey Gallo, to be more than kind, more on him. You know, but they're still putting up wins, right? After a little bit of a shakier start to the season, we think, here we go again. This team's not going to hit. They're not going to score runs. They're going to strike out a ton. But, you know, that is the sign of a really good ball club. And in a sport where, you know, it is a team sport, but it is probably one of the most individualistic team sports there is, right? The other eight guys in the lineup aren't helping the guy at the plate while he's standing up there and's got to face down the pitcher. It's a sport where the team can get by with the failure of a couple of guys if the other guys in the lineup are doing their jobs or even step up a little bit. You know, Anthony Rizzo has been absolutely taking advantage of the dimensions of Yankee Stadium. He's hitting the ball out. He's driving in runs. He's playing great defense. What else can you say about him? Mentioned Kiner Falefa again, coming in, started off slowly. He admitted maybe the bright lights of the Bronx were getting to him, now putting in the ball in play and helping to put some pressure on the opposing team's defense out in the field. Giancarlo Stanton, hitting the ball well. They're letting him play the field a little bit more. Thank God. And he's enjoying it, right? He plays better when he's in the field. He's more engaged. He's a good defensive player. This is an MVP who played basically every day in the field with the Marlins. And he can do it with the Yankees. He showed that. He shows he plays better with it. And I hope that the team continues to reward him with chances. Aaron Judge in a walk year is on a mission. And, you know, whether some people consciously or subconsciously feel that pressure of having to deliver to get a contract or even, you know, the first big contract in the case of Aaron Judge, is playing like he needs that check. And I don't care if it's spite. I don't care if he hates the entire Yankees front office and he's doing it to prove a point. I'm a fan. What he gets paid, how much Pepsi he's got to drink, does he fix his front teeth? Look, I've wore the night brace. I've been through the orthodontics. I don't really care. Hit the ball, play good defense, stay healthy, and help the team win. So those players, even DJ LeMahieu early on, peppering the ball all over the field, things that you saw out of him in the, you know, two full seasons or the season and a half when he was on the Yankees, really showing that he is a unique bat-to-ball skill type player, not just a product of Coors Field, and playing really good defense, all contributing to the Yankees' success in the early part of the season. Now, you flip the other side of the coin to the pitching staff. Again, all the more reason why it's important that the Yankees are stacking up wins now, regardless of who their opponent is. Look at their pitching staff. You know, Gerrit Cole's first three games were abysmal. His next three after that were very good. Nestor Cortez, a fan favorite because he seemed to be a junk ball throwing lefty with a badass handlebar mustache, you know, dropping the arm, mixing up the delivery, the leg kick, quick pitching, anywhere between David Cone and half of the, you know, Japanese pro baseball leagues type of style, throwing the ball to keep batters off balance and doing exceptionally well, right? Luis Severino, who hasn't delivered a full season since what, 2018? Jordan Montgomery, another guy coming off injuries, still relatively young, hasn't delivered a, you know, huge number of innings pitched. All of those guys as contributors in the rotation for the Yankees with a pitching staff that, if you were really going to target a weakness coming into the season outside of things like maybe catcher, question marks at shortstop and center field, it was going to be Gerrit Cole and who else? With a lot of question marks, even Tyone, these guys that have been injured. And between the injuries or lack of availability over a number of, you know, years now, really, you don't know if these guys are going to put up 200 innings like Gerrit Cole can. Not every ball club is going to have a workhorse pitcher, let alone two or three in the rotation. And I know that the game has moved towards pitch counts and innings limits, especially coming off of injuries and surgeries. The bullpen is a very big part of the game, and the Yankees have an exceptional bullpen this year. But you still need pitchers to start. You still need innings. That bullpen can't get overworked in April and May, because by the time you get down to September and October, when they're really needed in high leverage spots, you don't want them to be burnt out. So better that the Yankees win now while those players are in the lineup. And then, you know, you could worry about next month, or you could worry about September when you get there, if somebody gets hurt. The other thing that the Yankees have been doing is mixing up their lineup quite a bit. I believe last year in 2021, they set the franchise record for most number of unique lineups used. So that's batting order and where people are in the field. Yeah, I kind of go back and forth on this. I thought that the Yankees were doing their players a disservice, particularly guys like Gallo when they trade for him, Glaber, DJ LeMahieu, even Luke Voit when he was still on the team. You know, to me, if I know every day I'm slotting in this spot in the lineup, I'm playing this spot in the field, I don't have to worry about if I'm going to play, where I'm going to play, when I'm going to play, do I stay warm, on the bench, in the batting cage, is it really a day off, and all that other happy horseshit, I know I'm going to play and everything else becomes secondary. I focus on what I got to do. You look at teams like the Dodgers, who I think also set a record for unique lineups. They, like the Yankees, I don't think had the same lineup once so far this year. Might be a product of their analytics department. You know, it's thought of that they've got a really quant-driven front office and coaching staff, and Dave Roberts taking the orders from up top, much like people think Aaron Boone is doing. It could just be because they've got a ton of players that are good and deserve at-bats. Think about the Yankees coming into this season. It seemed like they had more players than they had consistent spots for. So rather than deal that depth away and try to improve and maybe get another pitcher or something like that, they keep them, right? Joey Gallo down with a groin injury already. That depth is going to be tested early, and you're going to be able to get at-bats for people. So all of those things together lead me to believe that maybe that consistent lineup, you're not going to have Derek Jeter leading off, you know, as he did in his later years, or batting second as he did early on in his career, every single game, playing at shortstop every single game. You know, Aaron Boone will mix it up. They're almost going pitcher by pitcher, lineup by lineup, checking the stats. I don't know if it's past success, who hits a lefty better than a righty, who hits the off-speed better than the hard stuff, but they're mixing and matching, and it looks like for many of the players, that's working out well. I mentioned Gleyber Torres. Look, I don't think it's fair, even if he was a shortstop, having come up, when he comes to the Yankees and he's hitting the ball all over the place and he's playing a strong second base, that you've got to force him back to being the shortstop. Was he ever really that much of a defensive ace that shortstop was going to be his can't-miss position? No. You kind of had to move him because another Brian Cashman trait. We've got a young second baseman. Let's go get DJ LeMahieu, who plays second base. Huh? Right? Like, the guy doesn't fill holes. He just fills the same hole 16 times. Team full of second basemen. Thanks a lot. Gleyber probably has been pressing to try to be more successful, to warrant getting at-bats. They talk about on the days he's benched, he's pissed off. Who wouldn't be? He wants to play. Wants to be a contributor to the team. But he's getting away from his tendencies. He's getting away from his strengths. Who knows what baseball we're using this inning, this year, this game. You know, humidor this year. Weren't using a humidor last year. Juice ball 2 or 3 years ago. They're trying to copy the tackiness of the cover of the Japanese league ball this year. These players can't rely on making subtle or even dramatic changes to their approach to get different results, because the materials they're using, the most important one being the ball, keeps changing on them. So this isn't Camden Yards before they move the fences back, where Gleyber is going to be hitting the juice ball out, you know, 20 times. 2-0 count or 2-1 count, runners on first and second with no outs, and he's swinging like Reggie Jackson, going on his back leg, swinging out of his tits up in the air, trying to hit the ball out. And he pops out in foul territory to the first baseman. I mean, that'll make your blood boil. Talk about a team, and I think everyone is at fault here, whether the coaching staff doesn't drill this, whether the front office doesn't value this, whether the player doesn't understand baseball, and they're pros, so you have to understand or guess that they understand baseball and situations. Maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I mean, what are you doing? Right? That happened in the game earlier today, right? You know, when the Yankees were stranding people, pop up, pop up, pop up. They're swinging for the fences with a runner in scoring position. You need one run. Put the ball in play. I mean, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I think back to, you know, Eli Manning, his most successful teams. Rush the passer, and on offense, they run with two good running backs, and then he's a great play-action passer. The Giants would win when they would throw 19, 20, 21 times a game. And then you think, well, the team is winning, and all the hype around successful championship teams, and it kind of just leaks onto the quarterback, and now Eli's got to throw the ball 35 times a game, turning it all over. You know, it's just one of those things where you don't know if you're a victim of your success, or in Gleyber's case, you're trying to go out and chase that success and limited opportunities, but you get away from who you are. And a 200-pound shortstop, barely 6 feet tall, trying to swing uppercut to hit the ball out is not what this team needs. and Glaber's opportunities are going to get fewer and farther between. They kept Marwin Gonzalez on the team because they had a really good spring training, and Aaron Boone always rewards hot play and success with sitting your ass on the bench, because everybody needs a rest, and the best time to rest is after you just had a great game, because he doesn't believe in momentum, because despite the fact that he played professional baseball, he seemingly has no idea what the hell to do half the time. Or he's getting his off, you know, his orders again from the front office, which is the trope, which I don't believe, but they probably have some insight into that and some sway on that. But these are guys that are really going to have to, you know, deliver, and he probably feels that pressure. Speaking of feeling the pressure, Joey Gallo, somebody that has always been a polarizing player, has been hyped up if anybody follows fantasy baseball. Since he started to come up in Texas, they always talked about prodigious power, big arm, could play the outfield, could run the bases even for a taller, lankier guy, athletic. He's going to strike out a ton. If I had a group of people follow me around that were as committed to either applying or inventing statistics to make me look good when I screw up, I mean, I'd be the best person on the planet. These, you know, some are sabermetricians, some of them are quant analytics guys that almost are inventing statistics to say Joey Gallo is a good ball player. Don't watch baseball. Look at the guy. I don't care what he did in Texas before they built this new stadium, and he's playing in front of 17,000 people a night for a last place team. I don't care. It's not the same when you are playing meaningful baseball games in the late summer and fall. It is not the same when you are playing meaningful baseball games in front of a major market franchise's fan base, night in and night out, on the road, where you either have your fans following you or you're the hot ticket for the opposing team to come in and boo the hell out of you. It's just like the NBA. Was it Bill Simmons who always used to write, "Beware the good player on the shit team," because somebody's got to put up numbers. Look, baseball is a little different because there's no guarantee you're going to get the hit. But he was the guy, or one of the few guys on a team that largely underperformed after that string of like ALCS wins and World Series appearances and things like that. I don't care that you're going to hit a home run every 14 at-bats if you do nothing in between those at-bats. They talk about his value being more towards on-base percentage. Oh, you boomer, why are you looking at batting average? I'm not a boomer, but batting average is indicative of being able to get a friggin' hit. And last time I checked, you score runs by hitting. You don't score runs by walking. Brett Gardner, who, by the way, as soon as Joey Gallo's groin was tweaked, I'm sure every Yankee fan knew that Brian Cashman was hitting star 7 on his desk phone to speed dial Brett Gardner. God forbid, please, Brett, enjoy retirement. Whatever it is that you want to do, we don't need you being an everyday player on the Yankees. We don't want you being an everyday player, even a bench player on this Yankees team. But if you talk about a guy like Brett Gardner, again, his value was playing exceptional defense in the cavernous left field of Yankee Stadium. Being an excellent runner. I don't want to say he's a base runner, because I didn't think he had like the base stealing skills, but with his pure speed, he could outrun a lot of the technical gaffes and things like that. Seeing a lot of pitches, fouling a lot of balls off, getting on base. For a player like that, Brett Gardner's job was not to drive in runs. Brett Gardner, outside of a lot of strange days where maybe he hits third and some seasons where he's hitting double-digit home runs, I mean, that's not his game. He could put the ball in play. You know, he could bunt, and I'm not enamored with the bunt. Again, I don't love the sacrifice small ball stuff, because the best part about small ball is a team that puts the ball in play. A strikeout puts pressure on nobody. The catcher's got to catch it, and if he drops it, he can still tag you out. Like, you got to put the ball in play. Brett Gardner's strength on offense was that he would see a lot of pitches, he could take his walks, he had a good eye. Like, that's a player where that's valuable. Don't tell me we got to go out and get Joey Gallo. He's a good defender. Bullshit, he hasn't done it for the Yankees. Missing fly balls, bad routes to balls, throwing the ball all over the field, missing the cutoff man, missing a base, just sort of winging it in. Doesn't know how to play the caroms off the left field wall. He's only had, you know, all season to practice that, or at least the offseason and spring and the end of last season. Don't give me that he's going to take his walks. It seems like his walk rate's down. Don't give me that, oh, well, at least he'll hit home runs. He ain't doing that since last year. And then I could tolerate the strikeouts. This is like the chef who cooks the world's greatest meal, but he does it once every 2 weeks. And I starve in between those 2 weeks. What am I supposed to do for food waiting for this guy to cook? What are we supposed to do waiting for runs while this guy strikes out again? This is something that is obviously pushed by the numbers guys across baseball. Don't worry about batting average. Look at his slugging. Well, the slugging unequally weights extra base hits. A double's worth more than a single. Sure it is, yeah. A home run's worth more than a double. Yeah, of course it is. But when you put numbers to that, almost arbitrarily so, it's going to make those home runs look more valuable on paper. So he can put up the perfect balance of them juxtaposed against 200-plus strikeouts, and someone's going to point at that number or a couple of those numbers specifically to say, well, he's valuable. Well, how many runs was the team scoring last year, and how many runs were they putting up after they got him? Did it get materially better? No. Did it take a half step back? Maybe. So this is not a player that their game is set up to meaningfully contribute regularly. So you've got to have the other players contribute, cook you a meal, while you're waiting for his home run or you're waiting for his master buffet every couple of weeks. Because they say he's a streaky hitter. Again, they say he's a good defender. I'll let you know when I see it. I don't care what you did in Texas. This is true for free agents and the Judge deal that's coming up too, right? Like, oh, he's got to get his money now because he didn't get paid before. I mean, he came up as an older sort of prospect in the Yankee system, but what you did when you were 26 is not what you will do when you are 36. Unless you're David Ortiz, because you're a freak of nature and a Hall of Famer and probably on steroids and everybody gives you a free pass. Everybody else, when you get older, doesn't play as well. The body breaks down, the skills diminish, the results get lessened. That's what Aaron Judge is going to have to deal with in his contract negotiations. But as far as Joey Gallo is concerned, again, not a player that I can think of warranting full-time lineup or roster availability. And I think we're going to see that, regardless of who is going to replace him while he's injured. When he comes back, he's got to be looking at fewer at-bats. Do we have to wait until the weather gets warmer? Does he have to work and get comfortable in the lineup or in the locker room, which they say is one of the quote-unquote most fun Yankee locker rooms in some time? Winning solves a lot of those problems too. He's got to figure it out, because this is a guy that is not brought in to do the Brett Gardner table setter role. He is a lefty power bat. They expect him to drive in runs. Striking out does not drive in runs. Getting a walk does not drive in runs. Getting a walk passes the baton. It's valuable, but if that's what your role is supposed to be on the team. And if there's anything that I could say about Brian Cashman, pitchers, offensive players, doesn't make a difference. For the most part, identifying that role, that niche to fill, the role you play on the team, it seems like he misapplies the strength of that player or the skills that they have for the role that's needed. You wanted to get faster. You wanted to get more athletic in the outfield. You wanted somebody who was going to get on base in front of DJ LeMahieu to move guys over, Stanton and Rizzo and Judge to get him in. Then you don't go get Joey Gallo to strike out 235 times. And don't tell me that, you know, big-time power hitters always struck out. Judge and Stanton strike out in that same lineup. They have 70 more points on their batting average. Oh, batting average doesn't matter. It does. It's a hit. You get a hit, you get on base, somebody had to move over if they were on base or came in, and your batting average number goes up. Okay? It's not the be-all, end-all. I understand that there are more important statistics than that. I'm not going to get into it on the first day of the podcast because some folks' eyes will glaze over because they don't give a shit about that. They want runs. Runs win games. So, look, the Yankees are in good shape right now. I'm not going to say they're in good shape because Joey Gallo's hurt. That's an insensitive thing to say, at least. They're in good shape because of their record. He's going to get healthy. When he comes back, the Yankees are definitely going to need him. What it looks like for the rest of the season, look, it's very early to tell. The Blue Jays look solid. Obviously, they can hit, and they haven't even hit as much as they really might be expected to. Springer's starting to hit the ball a little bit more. Bo Bichette's starting to hit the ball a little bit more. Vlad's been hitting the ball since he was born. He rolled onto a baseball field as an 8-year-old with his dad and is hitting the ball out. Some of their pitching acquisitions haven't been as strong. My man Kikuchi hit him in the cooch. He hasn't been that good. Right, really struggling for them, Berrios and some other guys. But it's tough when you play in Toronto, especially when the lid is closed on the dome and the ball flies out all over the place. Again, humidor, who knows what that's going to look like for the home run totals. They look like they're lower over the last couple of years. Maybe they are, you know, approaching levels of about 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe that's what MLB wants. Who knows? They seemingly change their approach all the time. But the most important thing is that the Yankees have stacked up some wins now, because a win in April will matter just as much as a win in September. The difference is last year and the last couple of years, the Yankees started off too slowly. They gave the other teams in the division a head start that they didn't need, and ultimately the Yankees couldn't chase down. So it's a team that's built to get a lead and keep it with the bullpen. They've actually had enough games where their lead has been big enough that you haven't had to ride the roller coaster with some of the guys in the back end of the bullpen. Chad Green largely looks like his former self. Jonathan Loaisiga having a little bit, it's tough to say let down, right? Because last year was almost unhittable. But while he tries to gain his midseason form, you know, a lot of these guys haven't had the amount of time with the truncated spring training to come into the season where they want to be. And we hear that that's more the case with the pitchers than the batters this year. And Aroldis Chapman, you want to talk about a guy that sometimes is walking in the winning run with a hanging slider because he doesn't know where his fastball is going to go. It's an adventure, and it's not something that you always want to have, particularly in the early part of the season, to rely upon those high leverage spots. You step on the throat of your weaker competition earlier in the year, and you take care of business and try to pad those wins where you can. Other things for this season, the Gerrit Cole spider tack thing. Look, can I fault him? It's hard to, right? Because it's something that has always been done with a wink and a nod, whether they had pine tar on the hat, something on their arm or their elbow. Michael Pineda, thanks a lot. That was always comical. Whether they put it under their belt, whether they put it in their back pocket, whether it's the rosin bag, you know, you lick your finger, then you can't go to the ball. It's in the inside of your glove. Now they're checking the glove. Again, I really can't get into all that because they keep changing the ball. What's a pitcher supposed to do? The thing that pisses me off about him is that there's always an excuse. I don't know if this is UCLA thing and him and Trevor Bauer, these cerebral guys, and pitchers always weird with their routines. You're getting paid more than certain teams are paying their entire roster this season. Who cares if the opening day ceremony threw off the timing of first pitch by 4 minutes and you're barking in the bullpen, let's get on with it, and you come out of the gate slowly? I don't freaking care. It doesn't matter. If you're bothered by those excuses, if you are affected by those changes in routine, then you're not mentally strong enough. And this is somebody who's been associated with championship caliber teams. This is someone who's been a highly touted prospect since his days coming up with the Pirates. And he seemingly puts it all together, having his best seasons in Houston. And is it because they had this pitching factory and they were one of the first guys or clubs that was adopting spin rate and all those things and tilt with their analytics to get pitchers to maximize their effectiveness? Or was it bullshit like Spider Tack and other? This is an organization that was doing their best Ringo Starr, Neil Peart, Lars Ulrich impression on Rubbermaid trash cans to win games. So, you know, do I put it past them or anyone else as far as quote-unquote gamesmanship or even outright cheating is concerned? No. There's too much money at stake. But that's the past. He's here now. He's getting paid like he's the guy. I don't want to hear, I don't like that catcher. They made me wait too long. There's too much noise. I can't hear the pitch comm from the I don't care. First of all, you're playing a baseball game that little kids play on sand-covered concrete fields that barely have grass growing on it, with a glove from their older sibling that doesn't fit, in cleats that are too tight, with the sun shining right in their face. Like, I don't care. You're playing a game, and you're playing at the highest level with every amenity and accommodation that you could think of. You need to play, and you need to perform. Anything else is just a poor look. And a couple times, Gerrit Cole's had to walk back some of his comments because it looks like he's making excuses. Nobody wants to hear excuses. We don't want to hear it in New York. I don't want to hear it from professional athletes at all, not the least of which is a guy that's getting paid more than, you know, four or five teams in the whole league. So that's his approach. Where does this come from? For me, look, it was always, I don't want to say assumed to be just a line or like a party line from the Yankees. Every year we expect to win the championship. It's championship or bust. New York expects championship. Like, look, realistically, you could look at the lineup and say, these guys aren't going to win a championship, right? Those Lyle Overbay, Vernon Wells years, not a championship club. Chase Headley at third base, those teams, not a championship club. So you can say all you want about wanting to be championship caliber team that you're expected to compete for and win championships, all you want. I think that that's good for the fans. I think that that sends a message to the players that you shouldn't necessarily take your foot off the gas pedal because maybe the team doesn't look so good on paper, to let them know what's expected of them. But recently, it almost feels like that has been softened a little bit. I don't know if that's Brian Cashman mellowing out in his older years. I don't know if he's trying to temper the fan base. I don't know if that's direction from Hal Steinbrenner. I think it has something to do with Aaron Boone's approach, because they're trying not to make it seem so corporate and you have to win and we don't care about fun and we just want to raise championships. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you do in April and May. It matters what you do in October. I mean, look, we're there to win. Right? You're there to win a championship. You're not there to compete like some of these teams say. I don't think any professional athlete, whether they're on the Reds winning two games so far or three games so far this season, or they're on the Dodgers or on the Yankees or the Mets, everyone wants to win. Everyone wants to be part of a winning team, a winning organization, or maybe said in the opposite perspective, they don't want to be a loser. They don't want to be a failure. They don't want to be part of a laughingstock organization. But it just feels that the messaging from the Yankees has been a little bit softened in that respect. It's not championship or bust. They're not saying that. They're saying things like, we don't want to pay that luxury tax penalty. We can't pay for everything. We already have a high payroll. Mom, I want a snack. We have snacks at home. That's one of the better memes that's out there right now. Right? You're growing up and you're at the park and the ice cream man comes around. Hey, Mom, can I get an ice? We have ice cream at home. You go home at ShopRite brand, right? You're not getting that Good Humor firecracker or the Bomb Pop, that double wide. You're getting a little single jammy and the blue stains your teeth, but it tastes like ass. That's what the Yankees have been messaging. And Aaron Boone, when you listen to him and you're 2 weeks into the season and the Yankees start off slowly and they strand runners in scoring position and don't put runners that are on base, drive them in, don't put pressure on the opposing defenses, don't run the base as well, any number of skill or focus, attention, motivation, effort-driven outcomes, we're grinding through it. It's a long season. We're trying hard. You don't see what work these guys are putting in behind the scenes. You know, a couple of weeks in, anybody rational, sure thing. Let's not jump to conclusions. It's a 162-game season. It's a long season. Let's not go overboard with our expectations or making assumptions on what we're seeing when this, you know, it's a small sample size, to use their words all the time. Then you get into June, then you get into July, then you're in September and your game's back. You're not winning the division. Well, we're grinding. You know, it's a long season. We got to see what's going to happen. We're already there, guys. Don't give me that shit 4 years later, Boone, or getting another four-year deal. Right? A lot of new faces. Some guys, you know, have been around for a while. They're being asked to deliver in a different way. You want to talk about, again, somebody like Kyle Higashioka or Luis Severino coming back off injury, or Chapman, you want him to maybe take a couple miles an hour off the fastball to be more consistent and more healthy because he's had a couple tweaks with injuries in the last couple years. You've got to deliver. Stop making excuses. And Aaron Boone, whether it's his job, whether it's his skill, whether it's the front office's request of him, they want him to be out in front of the media, be in front of the fan base, and seemingly protect players. Joe Girardi was not going to coddle any players. Joe Torre was not going to coddle any players. That doesn't mean you go out and you badmouth people. That doesn't mean that you say Joey Gallo doesn't look like he knows what the hell he's doing out there. What the hell is Glaber doing? You don't do that, obviously, right? It's still professional. But you can't make excuses and you can't cover for guys. And that was probably one of the more disappointing aspects of seeing him come back. Is there a better manager that's out there? Honestly, I didn't think Buck Showalter was coming back. And when the Mets got him, I didn't expect it. And a lot of Yankee fans saying, oh, that's a guy you need. You need a hard ass. You need a baseball lifer. Boone is a baseball lifer. You need somebody that's going to go out there and kick players in the ass, and he's not going to make excuses, and he's going to go out and he's going to get fired up, and he's going to sit there with a scowl on his face. All right, cool. I could appreciate that stereotype as much as the next guy. The message after base running gaffes, forgetting how many outs there are, not running the first base, again and again and again and again, looking at Gleyber Torres, and then you got to try to find and get him a spot in the lineup. What? You know, don't insult the fans. Don't insult the game. And I'm a fiery guy. A lot of fans might react that way too. So his job is different. You know, I'm calling out Joey Gallo saying, like, I don't want any part of your game. I'm not sitting in a room with him. Would I say it a little differently? Yeah, sure. But the message is the same because the results haven't changed. And I think that that's kind of the strangest part about Aaron Boone, is that his message stays the same. And, you know, seemingly we have to not be so hard on them, or they're working really hard. In a way, I don't care. Again, I just want results. I just want the wins. The team has gotten them, but there are still some distressing traits about how he's approaching this whole thing. The rest, I mentioned that Giancarlo Stanton enjoys playing in the field. He stays warmer. He seemingly stays healthier because he's not sitting on his ass on the bench to get up to home plate and swing like a caveman and tweak his calf or an oblique or something like that. He plays better at the plate when he's playing in the field. So what do? We got to DH him. I got to get Joey Gallo in the field. Oh my God, Joey Gallo. I got to get Hicks at-bats. I don't mind that as a switch hitter. Again, his better side is the left side of the dish, so not the end of the world. But you don't have to accommodate these guys. Stanton is an MVP. You could pencil him in for 30 home runs and 100 RBIs every year, period, even if he misses some time. So giving him rest because there is a game that you think, oh, I got to get one of my other guys at bats, or I need to give him rest. Speaking of memes, what is it? Idris Elba's character on The Office when he's talking to Jim. Must be nice to need a rest from all that rest. What the hell are you resting for? Players don't need that rest. You're talking about people that are, they look like they're carved out of a piece of rock. The conditioning, the diet, the training, again, the accommodations. They're going to play 3 hours of baseball and they're going to go sit in the hot tub in the clubhouse and get a massage from the trainer and eat a meal and fly first class or fly on a chartered flight or go back to their penthouse. These guys are not, you know, working in the offseason selling tires or ripping cigarettes in the clubhouse. They're fit professional athletes. You know when they could rest? They could rest in November when the season is over after a deep playoff run. You know, all this talk about rest is another thing that kills me, probably more so than where they hit in the lineup. And when I mention the inconsistency in the lineups, that's more about getting them at bats. You know, what's the best way for a Yankee player to get the night off? Hit a home run. I mean, it's almost like reaction. Aaron Boone, it's like, let's bottle that feeling up and you get the next day off and you could think about how nicely you hit the ball yesterday. That makes as much sense as like when I hit a good drive on the 18th tee and I put the head cover back in the driver. I'm like, yeah, so you can go to sleep for the next 5 weeks until I play again thinking about that hit. It doesn't make any sense. It's almost more superstition than anything. So this whole, we have to rest guys and we have to rotate guys, and when they don't perform, being very vocal about, oh, you know, he's, you know, working really hard at running the bases and remembering how many outs there are and not trying to hit the ball 700 feet when there's a runner on third base and one out. That's the thing that pisses me off the most about Boone. Because if they're focused on those little things, if they're focused on being a situational team, then they would do better at it. If we assume that every player that was developed by the Yankees, traded for, or signed knew nothing about it, and we assume that they never were trained on it and it was never a priority before, but now it is, after a few years, you shouldn't see that shit happen anymore. And it keeps happening. So who is responsible? And my dad always told me, you can't fire the team. And he's at the forefront of all of that stuff. So, look, nitpicking a lot of bit, because we have a lot of evidence from last year about what that looked like and prior years what that looked like. You know, this year's team is not those. But the front office is the same. The coach is the same. The biggest names are the same. So, to a certain degree, you have to expect, if not just be prepared for, the same. And can I rely on Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to continue to be respectable at the dish? Are the Yankees going to have a catcher that can hit this year? Is Josh Donaldson playing good defense? Is he going to drive in some runs? Is Rizzo's performance thus far, who arguably a Hall of Fame player, on the downside of his career, can you rely on him to do what he's been doing these first 5 weeks of the season for the remainder of the season? You know, I don't think you can take any of that stuff for granted, but we are where we are right now. And whether it all goes to hell or not, the Yankees have been performing admirably thus far early in the season. Some housekeeping notes. We're going to have the podcast come out at least once a week, maybe twice a week. We'll see how it goes to start off with. But I really encourage people to follow us on Twitter at EEmpire Sports. It's Evil Empire Sports. And also visit us on our website at evilempiresports.com. There's a bunch of stuff that we're going to talk about. We'll obviously be commenting on Major League Baseball and the state of it. There's a lot of suggestions. I know A-Rod just had one come out on the ESPN broadcast of Sunday Night Baseball a little bit earlier, where he's talking about all his ideas to change the game. Look, Rob Manfred, we share a same high school, ironically enough. Had the pleasure of meeting him before he was the commissioner, when he was still, I think, in the legal department, negotiating labor contracts and all that. That's ironic, considering that we just had a lockout. That's probably all we share about baseball in common, because I've got a lot of different ideas on how the sport could be made more popular. All this stuff, changing the ball, let's put it in the humidor, let's move all the fences back so that you don't have as many all or nothing. There's a lot of different simple solutions that we'll get into. Some of the national talk about different sports teams, not just in baseball, obviously. You know, we've all been waiting for baseball. There was the threat of having no baseball. You know, I'm the sort of guy, I may not even care about three other teams in the league, but I can watch every Yankee game. So that's what most of the talk is going to be about on this podcast. So thank you for listening. We'll be back next time on the Evil Empire Sports Podcast. I'm Rob Macarello signing off. Until